What's good, wagering world? It's your boy Five Star in Vegas, and I'm broadcasting live as always from beautiful Summerlin, Nevada. This is the Wagering World. I have a very special guest in here today, man. My homie, Super Bowl champion, former NFL quarterback, my boy Sean King. How you doing today, Sean?
I'm good, man. How you been, bro? Thanks for having me on.
Man, it's always a blessing to chop it up and kick it with you. You know, they understand we got a relationship outside of this, man. So it's just always good to see you, bro. I know you've been getting it on, doing a lot of work and stuff in media, man. How you been going?
Good, man. I'm good. I've been doing really good so far this year. So it's a marathon, not a sprint, but I'm seeing it clearly right now, and I'm getting the bounces you got to get.
Yeah, no doubt. That's what it's all about. You got to get the bounces, bro, because without these bounces, it's nothing at all, for sure about that, man. We gotta have the bounces. I forgot to hook my damn microphone up, but you can hear me clear, right?
Yeah, absolutely, loud and clear.
All right, cool. Let's kick it off, man. Let's get into a couple things with you being a guy who's tied in with the NFL really strongly, a former player, you know, as I always say, a Super Bowl champion, which has not been that many, man. So that's something to be very, very proud of, man. I want to ask you about through the first 6 weeks. I know you tapped in. Who's the best team in the NFL right now and why? A lot of people are saying your former team, the Tampa Bay Bucs, that's also your part of the world. So not only were you a player for that team, you kind of grew up rooting for the Bucs. So who do you think is the best team right now in the NFL?
Now, I actually think it is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And there's still a lot of value attached to the Bucs as well. You know, you look at their record, it's all because Baker Mayfield has been playing at an MVP level. Right. But when you look at it from a macro standpoint, they're winning games, and they don't have Mike Evans. They don't have Chris Godwin. They don't have Emeka Abuka now. They don't have Bucky Irvin. They don't have Luke Haggard or Luke Gedeky. Those are two of the five starting offensive linemen. You switch to defense, they're missing Kalijah Kansley, the starting defensive lineman. They're missing Zion McCollum, the starting cornerback. They just played a massive deal. So I bring it up to say all of those guys are due back. So they're going to have another influx of starting caliber talent to add to the success that they're already finding, which is creating depth. You found your Tez Johnson, who stepped up. You know, it's been a different guy every week. So they're still 18-1. I saw some numbers to win the Super Bowl. They're still plus 750 to win the NFC. So I just think when you're projecting long-term with Baker playing at the level he is, with the fact that this isn't like a one-year wonder. They've won the NFC South the last 4 years. They've won playoff games. Like, I think they're a very legitimate Super Bowl contender. And to get them right now 18-1, I think is great value. And plus 750 to win the NFC. So I think there's really good value there with this Buccaneer team.
Awesome, man. I don't know why I'm getting a little background noise out your mic. I don't know what it is. It's like a little sound.
Do you want me to take the AirPods out?
Yeah, if you don't mind. I think that's what it is. Let's try that. Let's try that.
Is that better?
Yeah, I think that's better. So Tampa Bay, of course, and I could definitely see that. I'm very high on Todd Bowles, Sean. Like, I don't know why they haven't considered him what he is, one of the better coaches in the league. He's done it for such a long time. Very cerebral guy, man. He doesn't get the credit he deserves, and now he has a real killer quarterback with Baker Mayfield, and he trusts him, as we saw against the Texans, the way that they won that game. You know, we know they let them score because they believe that Baker could get back. The ESPN poll agrees with you, Sean. They got the Bucs number one, Lions two, three the Bills, four the Colts. Well, they got a soft skills. I don't even consider them. Five Eagles, six Packers, seven Rams, eight Seahawks, Chiefs at number nine, and number 10 at the Broncos. I still think the Chiefs are the best team in the league. I think when it's all said and done, it's going to end up where the Chiefs are going to be raising the Lombardi. That's just my personal opinion. But PFF kind of lines up with me. PFF also has the Chiefs rated at number one. In my opinion, you cannot overlook the fact that you've got Andy Reid, who's been in the league forever. You got Patrick Mahomes, who's done it year in and year out, and they continue to always put up these other quarterbacks and try to lift them up to higher than what they are. But at the end of the day, they never can beat Pat, you know, in the winter. So I still like the Chiefs as being the best team. I think even though they have three losses, this is a great time to keep investing in them. I have several tickets on the man to win the AFC and to win the Super Bowl. Speaking of Patrick Mahomes, as anyone who watches this show knows, he stands alone to me as the best quarterback in the NFL. Do you have any pushback at all with that, Sean, on who you think the best quarterback in the NFL is right now?
Not at all. And I think the fact that he's found a way to keep the engine running in spite of Xavier Worthy getting hurt first series, first game, Rashee Rice being on suspension, Hollywood Brown being dinged up. He's found a way. He's using his athleticism more than he ever has to pick up first downs. He's accomplished. You know, I wouldn't push back at all. And I agree with the Chiefs' take because a lot like the Bucs, they're getting healthy. Xavier Worthy's now back. Rashee Rice is now off suspension. So, I mean, they're a dangerous team. I wouldn't bet against the Chiefs. They're coming off an impressive win against Detroit. You know, I do think Mahomes is a number one quarterback. I think there's some guys nipping at his heels. But they got to prove it. They got to figure out how to get over the hump. You know, Josh Allen being number one. Lamar is having a down year. Justin Herbert's doing some better stuff to kind of live up to his potential. But, you know, I wouldn't put – the only person that you could even really make an argument would be Matthew Stafford.
Yeah.
And you know, Stafford does not bring the added dimension of being able to pick up first downs with his legs that Mahomes does.
Right. Yeah, I definitely agree with that, man. I Matt Stafford is one who always flies on the radar, never gets the respect he deserves in this league. So that's a great point by you right there, Sean. I saw you the other day on the TL. I don't know if you were talking to a Cleveland Brown affiliate or why, but I saw you had some thoughts about the Cleveland Brown situation. Share that with us, man. Like I said, I keep getting a little bad audio. I think what it is, it might be wherever you're at, which you're at your cigar bar. Sean's broadcasting live from his cigar bar, man. He's a big cigar guy. And anytime I meet him, I got to go meet him at the cigar bar. You know? That's his thing. I think you're getting a little bad internet, but we can hear you. It's just a little sound that's coming in under it, but it'll clean it up when we post it. I'm sure that it'll run through the stream yard and clean it up, but we can't hear you loud and clear. It's just a little bit of back noise. But what were you saying about the Cleveland situation, and what do you think about the Browns moving forward?
So shout out to the Ultimate Cleveland Sports Show. I do a weekly segment on that show hosted by G. Bush and Jake Crawford and you know some others. I think we look at the organization from the outside, it looks dysfunctional. Like without vision, without a plan, most organizations fail. It doesn't look like they have a concise plan and vision for what they want to be. You know, I kind of said from the beginning of this, once you decide to select Dillon Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders, then next year should be about finding out, are one of those guys a oral generational type of player? Are they a franchise quarterback? And so I made the suggestion before the year started, and I got a lot of pushback from the people in Cleveland about hope and wanting to win. And I was like, to me, that's not what the season was about. I would have alternated starts between Dillon Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders. I would have told the public, listen, it's not about outcomes, it's about process. Dillon's going to start because we drafted him first, week one. Shedeur's going to start week two, Dillon week three. And people laughed at me, but what they didn't understand was sometimes when you can't find a solution, you have to go to a outside-the-box thought process to create the outcome you want. And I didn't draft two quarterbacks. Y'all did. So at the end of the year, I want to have enough information to formulate a real opinion on who Dillon Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders are at the NFL level. So that way this offseason, I understand from an organizational standpoint where what direction we got to move in. We could come out and be like, you know what? Dillon's our guy. Or Shedeur's my guy. We could come out this year and be like, you know what? We think both of them are great high-end backups. We got to go get us a number one. But you got to know. And the only way you know is by guys getting a chance to go out and perform. And the reason I said alternate starts, because now the expectations become achievable. It's not if I play great, I start the next week. If I play bad, I don't. It's already predetermined. No matter how good or bad you play, this is what we're going to do the rest of this year so that we can make a fair and, more importantly, the right decision on where we are at this position. And they didn't do it. They went out with Joe Flacco. Like, they're not good enough around him on offense. They're not talented enough at the skill spots to have a high ceiling with Joe Flacco. You bring in Kenny Pickett in the offseason. He takes up all those reps, you know, that should have been going to Dylan and Shador. And it just was a lot of wasted time. And I think organizationally, that's something they got to fix.
Yeah, definitely. And your approach is honestly the most rational approach that I could see with the Browns. But it just seems like, I don't know what's going on with Stefanski. I don't know if he's trying to get fired. I don't know. I don't know what's the deal on that, Shad. He's not moving correctly, in my opinion. Dylan Gabriel, I don't think, is a pro quarterback. I watched him a lot at UCF. I watched him a lot at Oregon. I watched him a lot at Oklahoma. I'm more into guys like yourself. Came from Tulane, a non-powerhouse, or not a non-traditional football school, because of the stuff that guys like you have to deal with having lesser talent around you and still being able to put up numbers. So that's why I always was a little bit higher on Shador than most people, because I've seen it before with Dak lifting up Mississippi State, Lamar lifting up Louisville. We can go on and on forever with these type of guys. Aaron Rodgers at Cal, Jared Goff at Cal, yourself at Tulane. I just think that it sets you up to be a better pro, you know, when you come with lesser talent and you were still able to sit in there, take those hits and throw darts. So I honestly think that Shador will end up winning the job. I just don't know if it's going to be under Stefanski as the coach. That's the thing.
Well, I had a higher grade on Shador going into the draft than I did Dylan Gabriel. So if I was GM of the Browns, I would have drafted Shador in the second round, because I had a late first, second round grade on him. And I would have allowed him to go out this year and be our starting quarterback, because I don't think Shador is such a can't-miss prospect that there aren't things that he has to prove at that level. But I also think he does enough good things where if we surround him with the right pieces, you know, we can win a lot of games. So, you know, I would have a conversation with Shador and be like, you know, tone it down just a little bit. I think he got a little carried away in the draft process, and it cost him.
Yeah.
But when we were all young, we all made mistakes. I don't mean they were malicious, you know, but mistake is a mistake. So I don't necessarily disagree with you. I think the one thing with Shador, and he's kind of backed himself in a corner, when you come out and say, I've watched the other quarterbacks in this league, and I know I'm better than most of them,
After
you eliminate any excuse when you get your shot. Nobody don't want to hear that the O-line didn't play well or that the receiver dropped this ball or that ball. Now it's just going to be about results. So that would be my message to him. Like, pipe down, be humble, stay quiet, because sometimes a quarterback, you can't control the outcomes.
Yes.
Like, you know, Joe Flacco looks much better in Cincy than he did in Cleveland, because Cincy got better personnel on offense.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you're going to need help. I mean, I don't care how great of a quarterback you are. You got to have help. A lot of people don't realize that Tom Brady, his success with the Patriots coincided with the offensive line coach that, you know, that he loved, with Skanecki or whatever his name is, that was Bill Belichick's guy. And he, you know, kept him with a great offensive line no matter when the pieces changed. And if anyone knows that, it's you, man, with you being under center and playing on Sundays. All right, speaking of Sunday, so in Tampa, I know you were in a situation where Tony Dungy had kind of maxed out. You guys had that heartbreaking loss against the Rams. You guys were a team right there at the door. They ended up deciding, okay, we're going to bring in John Gruden to get a new voice. And it ends up working for John Gruden and you guys as you win the championship with him as the head coach. But it also works for Tony Dungy as he goes to the Colts, new voice, new locker room, new guys that he's selling what he does to, and they win a championship. Should the Ravens move off of John Harbaugh?
Absolutely not. Like, let me put some truth serum in the air.
Okay.
It's hard to win a Super Bowl. It's hard to be a double-digit win team in the NFL every year.
Right.
Like, and nothing in life do you go through and don't have some kind of setback, an obstacle that pops up. And this is just one of those outlier seasons for the Ravens. You know, they mismanaged the fourth quarter in a couple of early games and ended up having losses in games that they dominated the majority of the game and probably should have won. And then the injury bug hit them. And so now the reality is they are what they are this year. I don't think that's a bad reflection on John Harbaugh because he's got too much. We got too much data, too much information of him being elite. Yeah, they haven't won a Super Bowl, but hell, I mean, if that's the prerequisite for keeping your job, then everybody in the NFL should get fired down there because it's only one that wins a year, and it's hard. Even when you got a great team, like, it's hard. And I just think people got to demonstrate more patience. You know, you can look at the college level. Like, how in the hell are you fired Franklin? Like, at Penn State. Y'all won the y'all in the college football semifinals last year. And the expectation placed on Penn State by people that don't know football coming into this season is why he got fired. How can you lose Tyler Warren, maybe the best all-around offensive player in college last year, and lose the best pass rusher defensive player in college football, and have a quarterback that hadn't got any better than Drew Aller, and then pundits make you the number one team coming into the next year? I didn't agree with that from the beginning, and I think that ultimately was why Franklin's narrative got to the point it did. Now, Northwestern's a bad loss, and UCLA's a bad loss, but when you look at the total body of work, like, what are the expectations for the new coach? So, you mean if I go 4 or 5 years in a row and win 10-plus games and then I have a bad start to season 6, like, y'all going to fire me too? Like, it's some real unrealistic expectations out here in some places.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to town on that on the last show about – I just can't understand what Penn State was thinking with that. James Franklin, you don't have a guy better – than him to replace him with, unless they have something already cut behind the scenes with Kirsten Yeti. That's the only guy that I could think of that's an upgrade. Anyone else is not an upgrade, especially when they talk about bringing over Matt Rhule. Come on, man. Like, are you serious? Like, James Franklin is an excellent coach. He's an excellent recruiter, and they're about to fall all the way off because you and I still remember that they just got over all that Sandusky and Paterno stuff and got back into the national spotlight being talked about for only football and not the off-the-court, off-the-field stuff that was, you know, having a black cloud over the program. Franklin's such a stand-up guy. Compared him, Sean, to like when you had Dusty Baker come for my Houston Astros. Everyone kind of started forgetting about all of the other incidents when you have such a stand-up gentleman leading a team that's widely respected. And that's how Franklin is. He's widely respected all over college football. He's won everywhere that he's gone, and he really got just a really bad deal over there. He made a mistake by attaching himself to Drew Aller, but as you and I know, it's not always just his no decision.
But that ultimately was his downfall. I mean, when you look at Penn State, who else is underachieving as an individual player that had big-time expectations? And I would even say Kirk Cignetti is an upgrade. We don't know that yet. What has he done in Indiana that Franklin hadn't done at Penn State? Nothing.
Right.
He's made Indiana better, but in the era of NIL, that's possible. But is it sustainable? Can you do it year in and year out? I thought the one thing that he did that Franklin hasn't done, he knew they needed to get better at quarterback. He went out and found Mendoza. That wasn't a kid that Indiana recruited. That wasn't a kid developed internally. He went out and got somebody else's quarterback, but he made the right choice. Same thing with Cristobal at Miami. They didn't recruit Carson Beck. They didn't develop Carson Beck, but they went out and got a quarterback that had a lot of ability that didn't play well the first half of the year for Georgia, but was playing much better towards the end of the year, then got hurt. Remember, Beck didn't play in the playoff games for Georgia. He was hurt. So you see what getting the quarterback position right can do for a collegiate football program and an NFL program. So I don't understand what Penn State's doing. I don't understand what direction they think they're headed in, but I thought they overreacted. I thought they got emotional with the firing of Franklin.
They definitely got emotional on that one, man. So last show, we cashed on the under. It was a miracle cash. It was one of those ones, Sean, that I call when the 1% beats the 99%, because I have a segment where I always talk about on the show that betting is the only market in the world where on the regular, 1% probability beats the 99%. You look like you had the game won and it's over. You think that, you know, you won it and you lose it. We had the under 49.5 on the Bills at the Falcons. They started out scoring like 21 points in the first quarter, so it did not look good. Ends up, Josh Allen throws the interception at the end of the game. I know you're really tied in with Michael Penix and stuff. I know that you've known him since high school and all of that. So what do you think about him and that Falcons team, and how do you think he's handling his first year as being the guy in ATL?
So it's interesting. In that draft, I had Penix rated as the second quarterback behind Jaden Daniels.
Okay.
You know, he has an unbelievable combination of traits. He has athleticism. You don't always see it because he don't always use it. But when he does need it, you see it, which you have to have, I think, now in this game. You got to be able to move. At least functional mobility has to be a part of your game. He has elite arm talent, and he has a composure that you don't see with young quarterbacks. Like, he can stand in the pocket when it's chaotic and stay calm. And I think that's a trait that if a guy doesn't have it, it's very hard to teach it. You know, one of my biggest concerns with Caleb Williams, for an example, is he does not have that same composure. It's a frenetic energy around him all the time. Like, he always looks like he's in a rush, you know, and that creates a lot of turnovers and missed throws. And if you look at Caleb, it's a lot of inaccurate balls. A lot of guys with the Bears are open, and the balls, you know, is a foot miss this way, foot miss that way. It's because he hadn't figured out how to calm down emotionally, and you don't see that with Penix. Penix is and you know that he distributes it, and it's really who he is because they were so willing to get away from Kirk Cousins, even though they had paid him that money. Like, when you got a dude, you know you got a dude. Like, everybody in the building know it. When they come in contact with him, when they watch practice, when they see how they interact with his teammates, like, you know you got a dude. That would be my messaging to people that want to push Shador. If Shador was a real dude right now, as we said in October 2025, guess what? He'd be the starting quarterback for the Browns. But there's something about his interpersonal skills or the way he carries himself or what he's doing, and it may not be tangible on the field, that makes people hesitate to give him the reins. You don't get none of that with Penix.
Right. Yeah, Michael Penix is impressive, man. Before Senyetti got there, the only time Indiana was good was when he was the quarterback over there. He ended up getting hurt. Caleb DeBoer takes him to Washington. With him, Washington goes all the way to the national championship. So Michael Penix is a proven commodity, and I think he has a really bright future in Atlanta. Good job by Raheem Morris getting away from Young Ho Koo, because he cost so many games last year. We know it's better, Sean. If Young Ho Koo is coming up to kick the ball, you might as well tear up your ticket.
Let me say this, though, before we put Koo in the grave. Sometimes kickers, just like quarterbacks, just need to change the scenery. Because if you ask any San Francisco 49er fan about Jake Moody, man, listen, they got the dartboard in their basement, and they've been throwing darts at his head for 3 years. And guess what? Jake Moody go to Chicago and look at him on Monday night.
Yeah.
Don't miss a kick. So, I mean, I get, and what your point is valid, but Koo could go somewhere else and be good.
Man, I'm really glad Jake Moody came through, because I had money line on the Bears and I had money line on the Falcons, and both of them were able to come through on Monday night for me, man. Okay, last thing on this NFL quarterback process while I got you on the show. It's a downdraft. Me and you already won this. We talked about this and I tweeted. I was going ham on all of these different scouting services when they were saying, well, the reason why Shador slipping to the fifth round is because they're so big on the guys next year. And I just kept going at war with guys. You know, we hate non-ball noise, Sean. So going to war with these guys like, bro, y'all can't be watching college football if you think any of these guys that are coming out are going to be better than Shador and Cam, at least right now. Now, maybe in a couple of years, for instance, Arch hasn't had enough snaps. And if he was good enough, don't you think he would have been a quarterback, because they did not have such a devotion and love to their other quarterback where they're going to say, you know what, we're going to just sit Arch on the bench and just let this kid play and lose the national championship. No, he wasn't ready. I never liked K. Klubnik because he doesn't have anything special. He can't throw the ball that well. He doesn't read defenses that well. He's not that fast. Never liked Drew Aller because he plays way smaller than his size, and he's another guy that gets tight when the moment's big. James Franklin called an outstanding game for him against Notre Dame. If not for him throwing that interception, they might would have won the national championship last year, because they should have beat Notre Dame with the game plan that was in place for him, but he could not execute it. I was not high on any of these guys. Lagway, I like him, but I don't like Napier. So we know he's not getting the proper coaching that he needs to get over there. I was big on Dante Moore coming out of UCLA. I like what we see from him. Dan Lanning seems to do a good job of getting the right OCs in place to keep his quarterbacks playing well, as we saw Bo Nix go to the NFL now and he's producing. Who's the quarterback coming out this year, or with the potential coming out this year, that you think can be the best NFL quarterback from the college ranks?
Well, Lagway is terrible. He's single-handedly is why Florida's not very good, because Florida is loaded at almost every other position, and Lagway, he's bad.
Repetition, though, Sean? You don't think it's just not getting any as a quarterback?
I don't think Florida does a good job of developing quarterbacks.
Okay.
They didn't develop Anthony Richardson. I mean, they didn't develop Emory Jones. Like, I can keep going. The list is long of guys that have come there highly recruited, who I think are talented, but needed a lot of refining. And up to this point, Florida just haven't been able to do it. I don't think there's a bona fide, unquestioned number one guy right now. I think a lot of guys have shown some flashes of potential, but they're going to have to play out the string. If you put my back to the burner right now and say I had to go with one guy and I have to project, it'd be Ty Simpson.
Okay.
I think Ty Simpson, when you look at how he played against Florida State and how he was able to bounce back, see, I'm looking at mental toughness. I'm looking at composure. I'm not just looking at ability and splash plays. I mean, the throw he makes on fourth down in the Missouri game, I mean, that's big time. And so I see a young man that's talented, that's getting better, getting more comfortable in DeBoer's system, on a team that's loaded wide receiver, that's playing good defense, that could play himself into the number one pick in the draft. My second guy right now would be Carson Beck. Remember, coming into last year, Carson Beck was supposed to be the number one pick in last year's draft, and he had an uneven year at Georgia. He kind of fell out of favor, I think, with the national pundits, who none of those people know football. The fact that they had Arch Manning, anybody that has Arch Manning before the season as their number one pick in the draft, you shouldn't listen to a word they say about football. And it's not because I don't think Arch Manning is going to be a good quarterback. Arch Manning needs reps. His style of play is nothing like Eli Manning or Peyton Manning. He's more like Josh Allen. Go look at Josh Allen film at Wyoming. It's almost identical to Arch. Good athlete, inaccurate throwing the football, but every now and then makes a spectacular throw. Allen got better with playing. To me, Arch is the same kind of prospect, but I think he's a two-year guy. I think Arch will come back to school, and I think Arch will be much better next year, and he'll eventually play himself into what everybody thought he was going to be. But to put that kind of expectation, you know, on a young man that we hadn't seen enough of, I don't think that's right, and I wish they would stop doing that. But right now, I would go Ty Simpson, Carson Beck. Not a big fan of Dante Moore as an NFL quarterback. It's just something when I watch him that I don't like. I think he's slow to process it. I think he takes way too many sacks. I think the fact that the college game allows him not to have to actually play quarterback at times, meaning all the screens, all the RPOs, you know, he hadn't really developed. I want to see guys that can throw the ball in rhythm on time with anticipatory, you know, reactions. Like the guy's breaking on the end cut, he's not there, the ball's gone on time. Mendoza does that at a high level a lot of times. So I would say Mendoza, Carson Beck are one or 2A, 2B, and I'd say Ty Simpson right now is number one. But again, this is a fluid list because I'm not willing to put my stamp on any of them as of yet.
Yeah, because right now the quarterback and is very limited in college was coming out. I do agree with you with all three of those guys. I'm not as high on Ty Simpson, but it is a good thing that his father is a coach. You know, I always like quarterbacks whose dads were coaches, and his dad still is the coach, I think, at Tennessee Martin. But as far as in the other two guys, I completely agree with Carson Beck. Just we already seen what happens to Georgia. For some reason, Kirby Smart doesn't like Hollywood quarterbacks. He doesn't like big-name quarterbacks. He like guys just like he has over there, not Gunnar Stockton, and they'll probably beat the hell out of Ole Miss this weekend with that type of quarterback. You know, that's just how Kirby likes to rock. I personally like a guy that's right out here with us in Vegas, Sean. He was from Hawaii, but he moved out here. That's Jade Maiva. He was a really good player at UNLV, redshirt freshman, but he also won the freshman of the year from the Mountain West. He's leading the country right now in QBR, and we also know the type of quarterbacks that Lincoln Riley produces. He has them the most pro-ready probably of any coach in college football. Maiva has the size. He's 6'4". He's 230, man. 13 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and I like his mobility. I think that Jaden Maiva is going to sneak in and surprise people as being a really solid quarterback, and I'm also very, very high on Fernando Mendoza as well. Let's break down this Steelers game. I know you have another gig you got to go to. 1 second. Let's get this up real fast. All right, man. So we got the Steelers tomorrow night. They're heading to Cincinnati. Steelers are leading the division right now, you know, surprising people. But Mike Tomlin continues to do what he does, and that's consistency. We spoke before about this. We knew Aaron Rodgers was going to have a much better year this season because it's with a solid organization. And also, it was on the second year coming off that ACL. So now he's looking more like the A-Rod that we know. Shout out to A-Rod. He showed me love when he pulled up to Vegas, man. He's a really cool guy. We talked for about 30 minutes, man, and he surprised me. He's a really, really nice dude, man. So shout out to him. May he continue his success and stay healthy. Now you got Flacco coming over there to Cincinnati. Much better team he had at Cleveland. Better receivers. And then you had Mike Tomlin go to the podium, and he's kind of ticked off at Andrew Berry. Like, what the hell are you doing? You helping out, you know, somebody who's already in trouble at the quarterback position right in the division. So now they meet each other. What's your opinion on Steelers -5.5 at Bengals? The over and under is 43.5. Do you like the side or the total on this one, Sean?
I haven't actually made a play in this game. I'm very hesitant in the NFL to get involved in division games. If you put my back to the fire, I probably would be leaning Bengals +5.5 and under in this game. I could just see some scenarios where this is a knockdown, drag out kind of game. Even though Flacco has stabilized them, he's still kind of checked down Charlie. He's just checking down the better, you know, athletes. Do I trust Aaron Rodgers and that Steeler offense? Totally no. I'm probably not going to play in this game. And the one thing that I would tell everybody out there, you never go broke taking a profit, right? It's small wins, it's small gains in sports betting. You don't have to bet a game just because the game is being played. So if you don't have a strong opinion, or at least this is the way I approach it, sometimes, a lot of times I just won't participate, and I'll wait till I have a really strong opinion, and I'll attack it. And you know, that's the way I stay away from division games. I had San Francisco last Thursday, +8.5. Against the Rams, even with the injuries, just those division games always seem to be competitive and tight. So if you made me bet that, I'd take the Bengals and +5.5.
Yeah, that would be the sharp play on that one. We loaded up on the Niners, and we had a money line on the show last week, man. So we did really well. And it was the same situation, as you say, in division game. One thing to keep in mind before we let Sean get out of here, Mike Tomlin has a record of 2-9 in Thursday night football games on the road as a head coach. Overall, the Steelers are only 14-21 in Thursday night games. He does not like Thursday night games at all. Sean, tell everybody.
And let me say this for the casual out there. The reason division games are so competitive is because of familiarity. Like when you play a team twice every year, you get to know their personnel, their tendencies, their schemes extremely well. So that makes it even more competitive as opposed to playing a team that you only play once every 3 years. You know, when you're doing cross conference or playing somebody in your conference that, you know, rotational wise, you don't get to play that often. So if you're looking for me, you can find me on X at Real Sean King. On Instagram, it's at Coach Sean King. I'm on the JB and the Smitty Show on YouTube every Monday, Wednesday, Friday morning, 8 to 9 specific. I'm on the Ultimate Cleveland Sports Show, 9 to 9:30 every Tuesday. Oh, and I'm also on the Odd Couple with Rod Parker every Friday at 4. So, making the rounds, you know, trying to get my voice back out there, trying to get back in the game. Thanks for having me, bro. I got to run. I got another one coming up right after this.
I already know, man. We appreciate your expertise, bro. That's Sean King, my homie. He'll be back on the show really soon. All right, guys. Let's get this situated right here real fast. All right, man. We really enjoy Sean King coming on. Always good to have my homie on here, man. He brings a lot of expertise. Sorry about the audio. If you guys couldn't really hear him well, don't worry about it. It'll run through the StreamYard filter, and when the show's posted on YouTube, it should be a lot clearer. I think wherever Sean was at, it was probably an internet situation or something like that. He was at his cigar bar. He's just opened up a new cigar bar. So he seems like he was over in where they keep the cigars at doing the show. Probably just was getting a bad audio or bad internet connection. Let me get into the Steelers game just a little bit more before we get to something else. All right, so coming in this game, you got the Steelers. They're coming off a 23-9 victory over Cleveland. If they win this one, they get a really nice lead in this division. Overall, the Steelers have won 12 of their last 15 meetings with the Bengals in Cincinnati. So you got two sides to look at with this one, with the fact that the Steelers don't play good on Thursday Night Football because, for one thing, their coach, Tomlin, hates Thursday Night Football. He never was a proponent for it. He didn't want it. He felt like it was a horrible idea. And, I mean, who can disagree with him? With all of the punishment these guys go through is less recovery time, less time to prepare for teams. So he doesn't like Thursday Night Football. So we'll see what type of effort he gives on this one. We know that it is a division game and that they're in first place. So I don't know if they try to cover or blow them out. They just play, you know, and try to get a win and go on and get the hell out of there healthy and get the extra time for the next week coming up. Knowing Tomlin, that's how they will approach it. The Bengals are hurting defensively. They're missing Trey Hendrickson. I don't know if he'll be back. He had a back contusion that occurred in the first half against Green Bay. He didn't return during that game. He also missed practice on Tuesday. I haven't got the practice reports for today to know if he practiced or not today on Wednesday. They will be getting back Shamar Stewart. You remember, it was a bunch of mess about them signing. I've never seen an organization have so many problems with getting a rookie, their first-round pick, in signed, but they finally get him in. And he's been pretty good when he could play, but he's missed the last four games with an ankle injury. Also, the Bengals could have no tight end, so that's not good for old Joe Flacco. Sean leans the under in this game, and he also leans on Cincinnati. I don't have an official play yet, but I do lean the over. I think that this will be a game where Cincinnati's defense has not been that good, and I think that the Steelers' offense has been pretty decent with Aaron Rodgers. I think that they can put up enough points to get to 43.5. I also think that Flacco is developing a little bit more chemistry with Jamar Chase, as we saw last week. We know Jamar Chase is right there, 1A, 1B, is the top receiver in the entire league. So I think that he puts on the show. So in this one, I definitely will probably be playing the over. I'll confirm it, though, tomorrow. I'll be on Jay Money's show on Thursday. Well, I think we're going on at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 11 a.m. Central Standard Time, and I'll confirm my play on that one. All right, guys, let's get to the next game. We got a game right here tonight, college football. The Delaware Fighting Blue Hens, they're going to be at Jacksonville State. This game is in Jacksonville, Alabama. A lot of people think it's Jacksonville, Florida, but it is not. I'm a fan of this Delaware team. I like their quarterback, Nick Minicucci. He got a hell of a last name, right? But Minicucci is a hell of a player as well. 8 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, and 7 rushing touchdowns. So in this short season already, he's accounted for 15 touchdown passes. He's been the starter there for a couple of years. Western Kentucky is undefeated in Conference USA play. They got by last week, and Liberty struggled last night against New Mexico State, barely winning. Western Kentucky lost to FIU. So now Jacksonville State stands alone in the Conference USA as the first-place team. But I think that ends tonight. The Blue Hens, they can't play for the Conference USA title because it's their first year in the league. I don't know why they did that. It seems like if you're in the league, you should be able to have access to the championship game, but they don't. But they can claim the regular season. I think that they will. Delaware is 3-0 when running for over 130 yards. They're 0-2 when they don't. That's the weakness for the Jacksonville State defense, man. They've allowed 130 yards to other teams, to their opponent, in rushing yards more than 4 times this year. They're not a good run defense. Delaware's run defense has held up well, and we know that's what Jacksonville State wants to do. Even though they don't have Rich Rodriguez anymore, they're still a run-first team. They don't throw the ball well. I'm always going to bet with the better quarterback in a situation like this. So I think that Delaware can go on the road and win at -3. We know that home field advantage should count for 3 points. So this means that on the neutral field, the books are saying Delaware is a touchdown favorite. So give me Delaware minus three. That's an official play for me. Once again, I am a Nick Minicucci fan. So let's go with that. And also, I like Minicucci to throw a touchdown pass and also to run for a touchdown pass as well. Different states have props. I don't know if you'll be able to find one. So that will be the play on that one. What we got in the comments here? Appreciate you for tuning in. Alonzo says, great show. My boy Shem Lindsay's always on here. What's good, baby? What's up, Cal? Good to have you in the wagering world as always. My boy Jerry says, Sean looks like Big Shug. Hopefully that audio clears up for us when we get it to the YouTube. I'll take a couple questions real quick before I get into the ball and parlay, if anyone has any. My boy Chappie. What up, Chappie? Blessings, brother. What's good, Peter? Good to have you inside the wagering world as usual. If you guys got any questions, just throw them up right now, and I'll answer them real fast before I get into the ball and parlay. I'll give you guys about 30 seconds to do that. Hit that like button if you're rocking with the wagering world. We appreciate all who are in here. It's all about positivity and it's all about making money. That's what we're here for. We're here to make everyone better betters. Hey, man, I'm a collector. Thanks. I appreciate that. Get this ball and parlay together real quick for you guys. Be back tomorrow with Jay Money on his station. We're coming on 30 minutes earlier than we usually come on tomorrow. So watch for me and Jay. Hey, brother, that's what it's all for. Iron sharpens iron. That's what we do this for, man. It's all for the love. I appreciate you, Sosa, man. I appreciate you, man. I love that picture. That's the perfect picture. Two goats right there. Two real goats right there with Kobe. Rest in peace. Talking to the one and only Michael Jordan. Any questions you guys have for Five Star in Vegas about tonight's slate or Thursday's slate, please shoot them up right now in the comments, and I'll do my best to answer them. Pulling up a couple of tennis matches real fast to figure out. I had a couple jotted down, but I want to get the numbers on them so I can give you guys the right number. On our tennis plays, you know, we got to hit some tennis plays. We did pretty well last show. We were able to cash on the football, but man, unfortunately, I don't know what happened with Joanna Garland in the first set. She did not look good. Shramkova gets it done. Just too much experience in that situation. Now we're going to come back. We're going to fade Shramkova. It's time to fade her right now. All right, we got Alvin Zalvin here. How you doing, Alvin? How do you think Tuesday, Wednesday college affect the score outcomes with a shorter week? Well, it's two ways you can go on that, Alvin. You got some teams who they're going to end up giving up more points because of the fact that the defense isn't rested. Look at West Kentucky last night. They looked horrible. Like, FIU is not even a good team, and they could not stop Western Kentucky couldn't stop FIU for anything in the first half. I turned it off after halftime because in the group, we had a really good night. We played, we won Moneyline with Arkansas State at plus 228. We won plus 7 with Arkansas State. And then we also cashed plus 10.5 with New Mexico State. And I had a Moneyline personally by myself as well. So I was really ticked that they didn't finish that off. Last night, they had every opportunity to win that game last night, and they end up blowing it late to Liberty, who's not good and have a quarterback who just, he's a turnover machine. But the other game, the only loss we took first half, -6.5 on Western Kentucky. So, Alvin, as you saw last night with Western Kentucky, some of these teams just aren't ready to play. Think about the normal schedule. If you're coming off and playing on Saturday, usually you're resting on Sunday. Monday, you're probably doing some rehab. And then Tuesday is when they get to the game plan. So everything's a little rushed, and it seemed like Tyson Hilton didn't have his team ready to play. So if anything, I don't think that these games in college go under because of the short week, Al, but I think they mostly go over just because you have not a lot of effort from some of the players. So great question on that one. I appreciate it. Any more questions for Five Star before we get into the ball and parlay? All right, let's get to the ball and parlay, man. I appreciate everyone who tuned in. You guys hit that like button if you rock with Five Star in Vegas and you're rocking with the Wagering World. Also, www.thewageringworld.com. Get the merch. I appreciate all who support. If you guys follow me on X, you can also DM me about the merchandise. Maybe getting some one-on-one items made as well. You already know all of the different sayings and things, and then you have the logo pieces like I'm wearing right now. But you got the It's Us Versus the Machine. You got the Underground and the Underdogs. And also, we have Oatmeal Beats Snowmeal. Soon, we got Kick the Damn Extra Point merch coming. We already got the logo. I just haven't sent them off to get them printed yet. I appreciate that, bro. I appreciate that, man. That's what it's all about, man. It's all about us trying to stack up this money. Twitter name is @5StarInVegas. Spell out the five. F-I-V-E. Do not put the number. Spell out the five. I went and grabbed the one with the number just so no one would try to, you know, act like they're me or something on there. So that's mine as well. But please follow the 5StarInVegas. Spell out the five. You should see it right here. It's a little blocked right now, but it's @5StarInVegas, the same way that you see it spelled out right here on the screen. Let's get to some tennis real quick, man, and wrap this show up. I got a lot of things that I could be doing on this beautiful Wednesday. So we're going to go with Ann Lee. We're going to Shrimkova played her best match of the year against Garland, who's a young girl who wasn't ready, but she's not prepared for Ann Lee. Ann Lee is 2-0 against her, and I think she gets it done again in Osaka. Give me Ann Lee at -170 over Shrimkova. And then also, we're going to go with Elise Mertens. She's +110 against Teresa Valentova. Valentova's a young girl from Czechoslovakia. She's on the come up, but I don't know what the hell the books are thinking by having Elise Mertens as the dog against her. I guess they're trying to bag rookies who don't really watch tennis, and they're just looking for short numbers to pile on money line parlays. But I don't give a damn. I'm taking Elise Mertens. Elise Mertens is a proven commodity. She's been a top 30 player or so for many years. And Valentova is a young girl on the come up. I just don't think that she has the type of game and just the type of mentality to outlast Elise Mertens. So both of these matches will probably go three sets. But with that said, I definitely think that Elise Mertens gets it done at +110. I also think that Ann Lee gets it done at -170. So those are the two plays from Five Star in Vegas for the ball and parlay. We're going to Osaka, Japan for tennis. Really good match last night, man. I won with Naomi Osaka. I took her after she lost the second set. I jumped in on the first set after she was down a break, and she was able to pull it out. And then she ends up losing the second set, and she gets it done, but she should get it done since her name is the name of the tournament. You know, she took her last name from the town that her family's from, Osaka, Japan. Drop a Dimes asked me any thoughts on the Colts and the Chargers. We will talk about that more on Friday with Ski and I. Me and Ski will be right here on this channel with, you know, the Friday picks with me and Ski Profit. Hey, guys, I appreciate everyone who tuned in to the Wagering World. It was great having Sean King on. Not too many shows of my size are able to reach out and get certain guests that I'm able to get. And I'm grateful that I'm tied in with the right people, man. And Sean is a really, really sharp dude. A lot of, you know, great info about the game. Not only did he play the game, but he's also one of the better bettors inside of Vegas, man. He's been pro ever since he's retired now, man. He was on VSiN for a long time, and now he's also working with Fox. So you guys go follow my boy, the real Sean King. If you put in Sean King, you'll get the activist guy, because he got it before Sean did. So it'll say the real Sean King. Make sure that you guys follow him. Great information. Once again, I apologize about the audio earlier. I guess wherever he was at with the internet, it was messing up the audio slightly. But if you guys want to rewatch the show on YouTube or listen to it on anywhere where they have podcasts from, whether it's iHeart, whether it's Apple Podcast, the show's everywhere. You can hear it again. And in about 30 minutes or so when it posts, I believe it'll be cleared up. It's a filter that StreamYard has that should take out all of that back noise, and you'll get a clear version of everything that Sean was saying. As usual, he brought some really great information that only a Super Bowl champion and a former NFL quarterback can. As always, I dedicate this show to the greatest Houston sports fan that I know, and that's my father, John H. Lindsay. I'll see you guys tomorrow on Jay Money Show, and then I'll see you guys again right here on my channel on Fridays. Me and Ski come bring the heat. I think we swept both shows, if I'm not mistaken. We didn't take an L on Jay Money or on Ski's show. So let's stay hot. Let's continue to help each other out. Let's get this money, man. It's always us versus the machine. 5-star in Vegas.